Hello there, bakeroos and bakerettes. Welcome to the Rise Up Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Dick, and this is the show about bakers and bakeries and bakery owners and all the folks that work so hard, often through the night, to make the good stuff and share it with the people in their community. How are you today? Glad that you're here. Glad that you're going to listen to this talk. We've got a really good show lined up for you today. I'm talking with Adrian Hale, who is a writer and a baker and a teacher from Portland, Oregon, or who lives in Portland, Oregon. She's from other places and has traveled a lot, and we talk about all of that and talk about whole grains and local grains and grain sheds and more coming up in a minute. So stay tuned for that. It's a good chat. I had a lot of fun. But before that, just wanted to say hi, check in, see how you're doing. Make sure, you know, again, if you're in the north of the world, that you're enjoying the warmer weather and maybe thinking about summer and what you're going to do, that kind of thing. If you're in the south of the world, maybe, you know, you're thinking about fall and, you know, maybe the leaves are turning and that kind of deal. And if you, you know, live in the center of the world, it's the equator. It's nice. It's hot. You know, wherever you are, I hope you're having fun. Hope you're enjoying life. I'm enjoying life, I have to say, and that's not something I say very often, but it hit me last weekend as I was walking around the city with Cindy, and we went on two kind of big walks, one in the commercial part of the city, and you know, visited some of our favorite places, and you know, bought some baking and bought some coffee beans and bought a book and that kind of stuff. And then the next day we did a long walk down along the water and scrambled on rocks and that kind of thing with our friend Renee, and that was a lot of fun, you know. And in both cases, I realized, hey, I'm really kind of content and happy and in a good place, which, like I say, doesn't always happen for me. It's been a long year and a half here in Victoria trying to get used to this being my new home, and I think it's coming along. It's coming along nicely. I'm enjoying my days. I'm happy doing what I'm doing, happy making this podcast. I'm happy with the folks at bakersforbakers.org and, you know, chatting with them and helping them out. And yeah, I got nothing. I have no complaints. So there you go. I even got my chair, my funky chair that I ordered a while back. I mentioned it on last week's show that it made a trip to Saskatchewan and back. It went further. It went all the way to Ontario because the delivery truck, when it left the warehouse in Burnaby, instead of turning left and coming 50 miles to my place, turned right and went 2,500 miles to Ontario and then turned around and came 2,500 miles back and would have gone through my hometown in Saskatchewan twice on that journey, something I am not allowed to do until some of these travel restrictions lift. But yeah, good for the chair. I hope they said hi to folks. But I got it and set it up, and it's pretty cool. I'm discovering where my lumbar is because it has lumbar supports. I guess I needed it because my lumbar feels good. Thank you. We had a Bakers for Bakers roundtable on Zoom last week, and it was great fun. Had 17 people come from all over the place. There's a fella from Holland, all over North America as well. And we were talking about cottage bakeries and micro bakeries and, you know, the smaller guys, you know, usually working out of your house, that kind of thing. And the challenges that folks like that face, and also talked a bit about being happy, you know, just being. Some people are doing the cottage bakery, market bakery thing as a step in a journey to, you know, a brick and mortar retail bakery, you know, on Main Street, you know, on the proverbial Main Street, that kind of a thing. And some folks are doing it while keeping a day job and doing it a couple days a week because they really enjoy it. And some of the people are trying to transition away from the day job to baking full time, and whether it's still out of the house or something bigger, but making it so baking provides 100% of their living. And no matter where folks are at, it's okay that that is where you're at. And for some folks, it's like, I'm happy with this. I like my day job. I like the combination of baking and my day job. I'm content where I am. And that's awesome. And so one of the big kind of lessons or themes of the round table call was wherever you're at, that can be enough if that's what you want. And if you want more and you want bigger and you want more growth, that's okay too. You know, no wrong answers to this, so long as the business is serving you and so long as you're happy with the way that you're able to serve your community. And so that was nice. It took the pressure off for some folks, I've since heard. And I don't know, some of it rubbed off on me because ever since that call, I've been walking around with a little less pressure on my shoulders with the work that I do. And I don't really know why, but it's nice. So I think the lesson in all of this is that it is good to talk with other people that are doing something kind of like what you're doing, but it doesn't have to be exactly like what you're doing. And that's, you know, and it's a bit of a plug now for Bakers for Bakers. That's Bakers, number four, bakers.org. It's a forum, it's a community for bakery owners, no matter what their size. Whether you are a cottage baker or a micro baker that, is selling twice a week or once a week to folks in the neighborhood, or whether you've got a brick and mortar operation or that's doing full retail or wholesale or a bit of both, come on in, say hi, meet each other, be happy hanging out with other bakers and help each other out. Because, you know, one of my themes is individually, we don't know everything, but together we know a lot. And the folks at Bakers for Bakers collectively know a lot. And it's a lot of fun helping each other out, sharing what we know and learning as we go. So, you know, if that's something that you're interested in, something that you're curious about, did I mention it's free to sign up? Head over to bakersforbakers.org, sign up. Would love to see you there. All right, on to the main part of the show, Adrian Hale. So I met Adrian through Brant Stewart, who was on the show a couple months back. Brant's the fellow that was out in Lebanon building a bakery in Beirut and doing all kinds of funky stuff out there. And he mentioned that when he was learning the craft in the US, you know, one of his good friends was Adrian Hale. And she is on Instagram as 1,000 Bites of Bread and, you know, does a little bit of baking under this 1,000 Bites of Bread moniker. Does a lot of teaching, which you're going to hear about through Airbnb experiences, if you can believe it. I've never thought of it that as an option, but that's what she was doing. And also is a writer and has written for a lot of magazines and stuff, and is really promoting and advocating for local grains, local grain economy, whole grain flour. From a little to whole hog, do the whole thing. And it was great. And we had a really good chat. And what we realized is what I realized anyways, is that we had an awful lot in common and have been following very similar paths. Maybe, she's a year or so ahead of me, but it's like, there was a lot of, oh yeah, I went to this thing just after you did, and so on and so forth. So a lot of fun. We talk about all the stuff. It goes all over the place, and that's what makes it one of my favorite types of conversations. Hope you enjoy it. Adrian Hale, 1,000 Bites of Bread. Here we go.
I actually listened to the one that dropped this morning already.
So. Oh, did you really? Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's like my favorite Wednesday morning ritual.
Is that ever nice to hear? Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's I'm always surprised by who enjoys which episode. And all I really know, I get the odd email and then I hear, like, I see comments on Instagram or that kind of a thing, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I don't know, it kind of, it warms my heart when it's like, oh, Okay, Adrian's left a comment, or you know, the folks at Evelyn's Crackers has left mm-hmm. a comment, you know,
yeah,
and that kind of thing. And it's like, oh, is that ever? That's interesting that you know the person on the call or whatever, like whatever yeah. that connection is, right? It's,
yeah,
it's cool. Well, yeah,
yeah.
Cool.
I mean, yeah, you've definitely interviewed a lot of my friends from the grain community, and also like you and I have been in the same spaces at different times. Like I was at the Montreal Grain Festival the year before you.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's fun to like be part of, you know, to listen to the community happenings. And, but I've also learned of a lot of new people from you. So that's been really fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. For sure. Well, and where are you today?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Are you? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And cool. I love Victoria.
Okay.
I'm actually, I live in Portland, Oregon, but I'm originally from Montreal.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's the connection out.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
But, yeah. And I lived in New York and all over the place.
Really? So, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Montreal is an amazing place. I have to tell you,
I've
only been there twice in my life, but it's been quite the adventure both times. So
yeah, yeah. I love it. I do yeah. love it.
And is that where you grew up then?
No, it's actually not where I grew up. Okay. I still have family there and I've gone yeah. back frequently. I actually have an article coming out about this, about Montreal bagels and how it connects to my personal history.
Okay.
But my family are concentration camp survivors and Montreal okay. has a big Jewish community.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And so that's how my family ended up there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my grandmother had a twin brother who both were in Auschwitz, but survived, thank wow. goodness.
Wow.
And my great uncle, he could get to America mm-hmm. and my grandmother couldn't. So she went to Montreal and we kind of, you know, planted roots there. But as soon as she could get closer to her brother, she moved down to Florida. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Another north-south connection from.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. That's, anyway. that's incredible. I don't think I've met anyone with relatives that went through that, you know, like,
yeah, that plays a big part of my bread story.
Well, yeah. Cause Montreal for sure has a strong Jewish community and Montreal bagels are a thing unto themselves as well. Right.
Like, oh yeah. 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 I know. I just wrote that article and I yeah. like was interviewing friends and family to like get more perspective. And we all agreed that like a lot of times we'll buy Montreal bagels and bring them to wherever we live and mm-hmm. put them in the freezer so we can always have a real Montreal bagel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you shared on Instagram that Brooklyn bagel shop film from like the Brooklyn Library there.
Yeah,
and it's that kind of thing, you know, with so many, myself included and so many of the bakers that I talk to now, it's like, we're working on this sort of high end product, but it's good to remember that, you know, there's still places like, you know, like St. Viateur and the different, you know, these guys that were just make them by the thousands,
oh my
you know,
God,
and they're
God.
Making pennies each and make it up on volume and just go and feed folks, you know, like,
yeah. And that play, I mean, it's interesting because I know you talk a lot and I love your perspective on community bakeries.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's like, you know, yeah, those places are open 24/7 and feeding lots of people and have for years. And
yeah. And the folks in the neighborhood need the, well, call it cheap, good calories, you know?
It's like, yeah.
Yeah. I always wonder about that, you know, feeding the community at $6 a loaf or $9 a loaf or whatever it happens to be. It's like you know, but it's, I'm not the only one struggling with that, trying to find
hard,
out how do
yeah.
you make it more accessible? Yeah.
Yes. That actually also really plays into my story. So if you want to yeah. hear my bread story, I can just go ahead and.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Why I do what I do.
And then I'll link back to the article that you're, because with the timing of things, you'll probably launch your article before.
I don't,
show comes out.
I no? think it'll be out. It's part of Lost Bread. Do you know Lost Bread?
No.
That they're doing. Oh, they're amazing. I can connect you, but
Lost Bread, yeah.
They do a series of zines, and most of the ones that they've done up until now were grain specific. So
okay.
it would be like a whole, and there's a lot of levity and they're really fun to read. And and now they took a little break, probably because of COVID. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
But they're doing an issue that's all bagels. So I can't wait to see the rest.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. So how did you get your start then, Adrian?
Bread. Okay.
What's your story?
My bread story is it probably started with, I grew up in a Jewish family.
Yep.
And we eat tons of bread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just part of our foodways.
Yeah.
And not only that, but because my grandmother, who was like the matriarch of our family, mm-hmm. she was a concentration camp survivor. And she always talked about how bread saved her.
Okay.
So this is just the, you know, the kind of the idea that I grew up with. I didn't think that much about that, but, mm-hmm. You know, and I lived in New York and, you know, I worked at restaurants, but I wanted to work in food magazines. So that's what my goals were, but I decided to go to culinary school so that I could have a background and a little bit of everything so that, you know, while I was already working at magazines, but I just wanted more background.
Okay.
And in culinary school, I did love the bread kitchen. You know, we did like a month at it was called French Culinary at the time.
Right.
They did like a whole month in the bread kitchen at that time. And I loved it. I've always been drawn to bread and my family eats a lot of bread, but nobody really made that much bread.
Okay.
But my takeaway after going to school was like, oh, good bread can't really be made at home. And I'm working in these magazines that are for home bakers. So that was a really fun experience, but whatever, you know, just put it under my belt. And then we left New York after several years and moved to Oregon. We had two small kids at the time. And what happened was, this was about 10 years ago. My oldest child got sick.
Okay.
And it was like, and at the time she was 3.
Oh, wow.
And she got sick, or actually must've been 12 years ago. I'm losing my timelines because now she's 15, but, she got sick with, but it was like not acute, but like a chronic thing that every time she ate, she'd be like, oh, my stomach hurts. So we took her to doctors throughout that year of constantly struggling with this. And it turned out they couldn't find anything. You know, they did like H. pylori tests and all this different stuff. And at the end of the year, they're like, we just, you know, really don't know, but you might want to think about taking wheat out of her diet. Like maybe it's gluten. This was early in the gluten-free thing.
Right, sure.
And it was that moment that I had like a little like mini existential crisis of like, you know, not wanting to take bread out of my family's diet. And I didn't realize exactly why I had such strong feelings about it until I started reflecting on this history of bread. And like, even, you know, every time my grandma traveled, she'd bring home bread to us. Like, you know, cause we had have family all over the world cause everybody was scattered. So.
Yeah.
And so that is what started me in this rabbit hole of like learning about this food that has like sustained so many people throughout time. That was starting to like seem to make people sick you know. And so at that time I had that stint in the bread kitchen, you know, at school. I called all the people I knew who were making bread. And I said, you know, number one, I heard that sourdough fermentation was a little bit easier to digest. There was an article, I think in the LA Times back, you know, then. Yep. And so I was like, okay, I want to make sourdough. And I kind of started that immediately because a friend of mine had started a sourdough culture and gave some to me.
Yeah.
And I still have that going 12 years later. Thank you, Tanya. And she's, you know, she's somebody who is like a homesteader. You know, she has a job and everything, but she has a garden and she's a mom of 3. And she just, she started it and gave me some. So I made that change, and that alone really did seem to help my daughter's stomach problems. But that got me started on like wanting to make better and better bread. And when I say better and better, I ate a lot of good bread, and I still eat it all of the bakeries in town. But I just really, my focus then was getting the most nourishment from the bread. So when I called all these people that I had gone to culinary school with and said, I want to make bread with whole grain, you know, local flours,
yep,
and sourdough. And 12 years ago, they were like, it can't be done. It just, you know, it's not possible. And I'm like, really? But, you know, and then I started to think, like, I had studied with this herbalist when I was young, and she grinds her own flour, and her purview is different than what these bakers were trying to do, you know, which is not better or worse. It was just more in line with what I wanted,
right,
for, yep, feeding my family. And so I started to call the people who were not bakers, like the ones that we overlook, you know, like my mother-in-law, who kept the Amish friendship bread, and the herbalist who I studied with, and, you know, started to put the pieces together from what they were teaching me and what I knew. And also, you know, still talking to like bakers, and I knew bakers' percentage and this and that. So that's the rabbit hole I'm in. You know, I just, over the years, I've just wanted to learn more and more about the grain economy and what really makes, like, not only healthy bread, but healthy communities and all of that kind of stuff. So that's,
yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, and, well, and it's come a long way. And like our understanding of how to make really good whole grain breads has come a long way in the last 10 years, you know. It's, or because I even, well, you know, when I went to SFBI in 2008 now,
mm-hmm,
so that's about, we're on the same kind of time frame. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I remember I took a whole grain and specialty flour class, and the whole thing was positioned as, you're going to start adding this in like smaller percentages,
mm-hmm,
to enhance the flavor, mm-hmm, enhance the nutrition, but get something that people will want to buy. And mm-hmm, it's something, yeah, that people want, because there's just like no way,
yeah,
no how. And when I think of, you know, now, or, you know, when I was out in at Wheatstock 2018, so 10 years later, and you're going to a whole grain class, so that it's 100% fresh milled whole grain flour. This is the Redeemer, and this is the type of, and, you know, this is the field that was in, and it's night and day different product, yeah, at the end of the day, and just wildly different flavor and yeah, everything. And, you know, I love both, but it's so nice to see what can be done.
Yeah. I know. I love both too. And yeah, there's a place for both. And I'm definitely not like, you know, people should only have 100% whole grain. That's not my, yeah, thing. I love, and I think there's definitely value to like even just adding a little bit of local or whatever here and there. But I also, like, at some point I was like, do I want to go make bread? You know, mm-hmm, and I do, I trade bread with lots of neighbors and stuff. Like, I feed us mostly by trading, like, but I decided I want to teach. And it was from the point of view of like, I'm a very both and kind of person. And, you know, and people who are running bakeries have to make a certain set of decisions because cost matters. And then also, like, I have friends who are bakers who are like, I make 100% whole grain spelt and I sell one a month, you know, like, yep. I mean, not, yep, all communities want that, but,
yep,
but like, you know, and here, if it had already started in the culture, what is like completely entrenched now, where it's like local grains, whole grains, like, all, you know, I might not have become the baker that I am, because I was like a busy mom and working full time. And, but I just really, you know, I would like go to Kentucky where my in-laws live, and there really wasn't a choice, you know, even as things started to get more and more available here, you know, and I really wanted the mainstay of our diet, like the, you know,
yeah,
the weekdays, the everyday bread, to be more nutritious than what, sure, I was able to find.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's a whole transition from, at the start, it's like, well, I should do this because it's good for me, to now I'm seeking it out because it tastes amazing. And it's what I want. It's the thing that I want, you know?
Yeah.
And that's changed for an awful lot of folks, you know, the old timers, the pioneers will say, well, it was always like this or whatever. But I know that the last 10 years has been wild in that regard. Like, and also what's available and there's the number of people talking about it. It's not
definitely
like you, it's funny. You mentioned a zine and I just remember, you know, the first thing that popped into my mind was like the mimeograph, like the old school, you know, underground, we're going to pass it out on the street corner and stuff. And that's what the old, you know, the old gatherings, okay, we're going to talk whole grains, you know, in this secret meeting. And now it's like, I don't know, mainstream, but it's getting closer to, this is just, it's just something that's available now, which is lovely.
I know. And it's been fun to be a part of that. Cause I did decide that I wanted to be more of like a writer, educator, teacher in that realm. So like, as things in Portland were getting more and more, you know, going that way more and more, cause I feel like grains are like the last frontier in terms of local food movement or something.
Yep. Sure.
But, you know, I've learned alongside the bakers in town. And so I did start an Airbnb experience about 2 years ago. No, 2 years before quarantine. I've like completely lost the last year, but I was like teaching bread classes, you know, through Airbnb experiences, and they would come here, learn how to make bread at home. But then while it was like, you know, having its time to rest on the counter, we'd go out to all the other, or to, you know, I'd take them on a tour of bakeries.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, it was a really fun way to like show off my community and also teach people to do what I love. And, and so, but anyway, my point is that alongside all these bakers that I've like watched them grow and loved that and been part of a community. And I know you interviewed Annie Moss.
She
and I started a, like a whole grain bakers guild so that we could like share information and resources. And so it's been really fun to, I don't know, just kind of watch and be part of that growth. And I love it, you know, just watching all that happen.
Yeah. That Airbnb experience sounds amazing. It's like, you have to, you know, you think you have to go to Tuscany or Paris for something like that, but you've got enough, you've got more than enough in Portland to keep, to show folks the, and I would imagine even people from Portland would think this is pretty darn informative, you know, and places I didn't know about or that kind of a thing too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I definitely had, you know, a lot of people from out of town and some people that were more interested in learning the bread and some people that were more interested in the tour.
Yeah.
And then I did have a lot of like Portlanders, you know, who might like want to learn bread or
So cool.
Yeah. And now I'm doing Airbnb experiences online, but it's a much shortened, it's just like an hour of flower education.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of,
I like it.
That's kind of a COVID, a pivot.
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully it won't be too long and you'll be taking guys down the street again. And,
I want to bring that back, but I also am, I think I will keep this. I'm actually loving it because I'm learning too, you know, because Airbnb experiences is interesting where like somebody in Germany will take the flower hour and I'm teaching what I know. Cause I, 5 years ago, I did start to like travel the country to go to mills. Like I went to, you know, Utah and went, you know, to go see, I really wanted to understand flower from a deeper level.
Yeah.
And I went to places in France and, you know, I went around a little bit around the world and over the course of years, cause you know, I want to write about this.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, I do this flower hour and a lot of it is, you know, based on what I've learned here in the US, but now I'm like getting questions from places like Germany or, you know, Philippines. And I'm like, oh, I've got to answer this. So now I'm learning along with the students about flower around the world. So
yeah. Oh yeah. That's fantastic. We had a Bakers for Bakers call yesterday and a fella joined us from Holland and it was like, what a, like how cool is that? Right. You know, with the time we had it, it was predominantly North American folks just because of the time of day, but it was 11 o'clock at night. And he's like, no, I'm getting on the call here. And,
I know.
It's so cool to hear from him because you're right. It's and you know, Western Europe, Northern Europe, quite a bit different And then you start getting into the Philippines and it's like, I have no idea.
I know. So I've learned a lot. I want to hear more about Bakers for Bakers.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you. No, it's, you know, it's, well, one of the members said it yesterday. It's like, you know, it's an opportunity for folks to come and ask questions about their bakery.
Yeah.
In a safe space, I guess, call it that way, right? Where we're all learning. Like, and the whole theory is that, you know, nobody has all the answers, but together we know a lot. So
yeah,
let's get in there and don't be afraid to ask the questions. And so some of the folks in there, well, it's skews in both directions. We'll talk an awful lot about setting up shop, especially like with the rise of cottage bakers, even in the last year.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of folks comparing notes, you know, a fella just bought some used equipment and it's not working out for him. And what are my options? And so that kind of thing, up to, you know, folks trying to scale up their production and okay, I got to start making some adjustments and my croissants are not turning out. One of the longest threads in there, the longest conversations has been going on for months is troubleshooting croissants in production, right? When you, I'm trying to make a lot of these and it's not turning out the same way. What do I do? How do I let things relax? You know, how do I adjust my process so I'm not spending, you know, 14 hours on this batch and selling them for a dollar each or something, right? Like, what do I do?
It's so important. It's so important to have community. And that's really what my like goals are all about is like keeping community together. And that sounds like Bakers for Bakers is right in line with that of like,
totally. Yeah. Because everybody's at some spot in their baking journey. Right. And there have been folks that are in their second month of selling bread at, you know, out of their back door and they have something to offer, you know, and they truly do. And they don't think like nobody, that's the most fascinating thing is that nobody in there feels like they're the kind of person that should be offering up advice until someone asks a question and say, oh no, I did something just like that. Here's what I did.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's like, I'm going to tell you what happened to me, what worked for me or what didn't work for me. You form your own opinion. Like because there's this intimidation factor, I think, with some of the big names in our community here that it's like, well, you know, so-and-so says that this is the thing, you know, or I read in an article that this person like 15 years ago said this thing and it's taken as gospel.
Right.
And it's like, yes. And there's actually what happened in front of me today. Let's talk about that too. And we can put it all together, you know?
So yeah.
It's nice. It's just a nice, it's a friendly place. I've been kind of nervous about, you know, because as we get more people and stuff, it's like sooner or later, isn't somebody going to just like tee off and I got to moderate or something. And it's like, no, it hasn't been like that at all. Because it's been folks helping each other. So yeah, it's been lovely.
It reminds when I hear you talking about it on the show, sometimes I'm like, it reminds me of several years ago at the grain gathering, there was a session that I kind of like ended up in the session, but it was like one of the things that stuck with me a lot because it was like a few seasoned bakers who had like had bakeries and kind of like you, like you'd gone through.
Yep.
And it was about how they wanted to now scale down.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh my gosh, I love this perspective because they've already been through it. And they're kind of like telling people, hey, maybe you don't need to keep scaling up and up and up. Like maybe you'll be happy at a certain, you know, I don't know. So it was,
the questions
were fascinating. And
yeah, it's totally true. And those different perspectives are helpful. And that's why I like talking to a range of folks on the show as well. Cause you get a lot of different, you know, it's, and there are some folks that it's like, well, no, I actually want to build a business and grow this business. And because if I can grow the business to be, you know, larger, have a large team now, look, this team is supporting, we're serving more customers and we're also making a living for more people, you know, are able to make a living doing this. And that's a good thing. And it's a gift and it's, And so again, I'm so bloody neutral, but it's like, yeah, there is nothing at all wrong with that. Mm-hmm. I've been talking with a few folks about is when it's though when you're in that kind of growth mindset, but truly you really want to be the one baking the product. Mm-hmm. That's when you're going to crack.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, like that's, yeah. It's just pick what you want to do and
exactly.
do it, you know, for yeah. sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I'm curious with the writing work that you do and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. What, can you tell me more about that? Like what kind of outlets do you have to share what you're interested in?
Well, I've been a freelance writer for so many years now and yeah. worked at magazines. So I have pieces all over the place, like Sever magazine, which I worked at, you know, like there was a magazine here in Portland for a long yeah. time that was a food magazine called Mix. And I wrote
okay.
for them. They're gone now. So I don't even know. You could maybe find that stuff online. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've written all over the place for years and years and years. And I also, once I started teaching the Airbnb classes, I did start a newsletter for people who
right.
have taken my class to like share recipes. And a lot of times that is just sharing thoughts, mm-hmm. you know, that I've
yeah.
things I'm thinking of. I also do keep a blog of what I'm baking
yeah.
on my site. And then just write freelance, you know,
yeah.
And teach.
Yeah.
And I'm a mom, so.
Yo, well, sure. Yeah.
I have quarantine teenagers now. So that's, this year has been a lot of yeah. pivoting with yeah. schools, like a school schedule to be at home and all that stuff. So.
Well, is it a case then of you've got this idea, you know, you're going down this whole grain path and discovering mills and that kind of thing. And then it's just like, all right, I know I'm a good writer. I'm going to write something up and let's convince the magazines that this would be a good story to run. Is that kind of the.
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes it starts with an idea. I don't know. I'm never like, oh, I'm a good writer. I'm like, usually like well, I have something to say and I need yeah. to like figure out how to say it. And I'll do it decently well. And then I'll pitch if it's an editor that I've never worked with, I'll pitch, you know, like mm-hmm. I'll think like who, you know, would this story, who would like this story? Like who, right. who has an audience that this story need, where it needs to be told. And a lot of times I'll get rejected like, you know, 12 times and then it might find an outlet. Some things never find an outlet. And then other times since I've been doing it so long, it's the editor, you know, I either worked with them at another magazine or,
okay.
or something. And it's also like now, you know, there's lots of, like Culinary Breeding Network who I, you know, really love what they do. I've worked helping with some of their zines that they okay. do. There's a barley zine, Lane Selman is a great person to interview from the breeding perspective with grains. Yeah. So I don't know if you'd, you know, but yeah. anyway,
oh yeah.
So it's a kind of all over the place. I don't okay. have one. Yeah.
I'm just really curious just because, it's an opportunity to, you know, expand the network and expand the community. And I've often wondered how folks make the leap from, so Bread Magazine being one of the, mm-hmm. One of the things that the fella in Finland started, and there's a guy in Montreal,
yeah.
and I wish I was better with names, but I get that magazine, and it's like, okay, here's yeah. a labor of love. I'm going to yeah. put this thing together and push it out, as opposed to, you know, the stuff that you see on the shelves in, you know, chapters yeah. or the bookstore or whatever, and it's like, how in the heck?
Oh, I know.
How the heck do you even do that? Yeah.
I know. I wish I had a more clear answer. Like I came at it, as I said, like I started food writing before anything
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
And so even like now I worked at restaurants, but it was like, you know, in my 20s, you know, yeah. and I was just, yeah. it was a job, but like at a certain point I kind of landed at, I want to be a writer and I love food. And really soon after that, somebody came to me this was so long ago, but anyway, somebody came to me and said, oh, we're starting up a new, you know, food magazine. And mm-hmm. we were wondering if you want to do the food section for it. And I fell into that. And then I did start writing 2 columns a week for the Orlando Weekly. I was living in Orlando at the time. Wow. And I don't know, I've just done it so long. It's like what I do and what I know. Yeah. And sometimes it's such a struggle, like anything freelance, you know, where you're like, I better. And now it's not always just articles. Sometimes, you know, it's like writing all kinds of, you know, in all kinds of outlets or teaching, you know, now that I teach, I piece that together too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cause it's like, you build up that expertise over time. Like if you're going to stay writing in an area for so long and doing it as well, you know, back and forth, you can't help but.
And it's
that
changed.
Collector of info, right?
It's changed so much. Like, you know, I know we're talking about how the bread world has changed, but it would also just, you know, because I didn't mention this, I did also run a food magazine for several years called Communal Table. So that was fun. Because I really did enjoy editing other people as well and got a different perspective. But so it's just really changed. Like when I was working for the Orlando Weekly in, you know, the early aughts, you know, I was doing a food article once a week and also a review once a week. And, you know, there was like a budget for me to go to the restaurants 3 times, sometimes 4, you know, it was just a different world thing. And that was for a weekly that was like for the 18 to 35 year old demographic. So now I think that that wouldn't, you know, be the case at all.
Yeah. So your magazine was called Communal Table.
Yes.
You've got your grandmother saying, you know, bread's the thing that saved me. You've got an entire whole grain journey based on saying, I can't let my daughter not have the same experience or the same feeling, you know, that connectedness around the table seems to be a pretty big, part of you. Yeah.
Yeah. So when I started Communal Table, you know, and I wrote up like kind of the mission, I was remembering sitting at the table after our like Rosh Hashanah dinner and listening to the grownups talk and just hash out all of the, you know, it was like about everything, you know, just hashing it all out and how like, the food, the plate, that's the place where what brings us together and also shows us what sets us apart. If, you know, where you can have the difficult conversations sometimes as well. And that was, you know, kind of what I was going for with Communal Table too. Yeah. But so I'm very interested in the stories that food tells about us and that we tell about food. Like that is definitely probably the through line.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can picture that. Especially as the little kid, you learn the family history.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sitting around the table, listening to the grownups, you know.
Yeah. And I love now my son will sit at the table for a long time after, you know, where the grownups are, you know, sitting there drinking some Turkish coffee a little too long. They're a little bored, but then he starts to like ask questions and it just reminds me of that.
Yeah.
You know, through time too.
Yeah. Yeah. And my grandparents, it's like, same thing. I was the same kid at the table listening in all the time.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while they'd flip into Russian if there was something that they want the kids to understand, you know, they'd be flipping back and forth. Yeah.
Yep.
No. Yeah. Yeah. But no, that's, the kitchen table in my grandmother's house was like the biggest. That was where everybody sat in they had a dining room. Nobody went in the dining room. It was the big kitchen table and you could get, you know, pull up some extra chairs and have, you know, 15, 20 people crammed in around there. And it's just the way it is. Yeah.
That actually is bringing a tear to my eye. It's like, that's just, and that, you know, kind of goes back to something that I think we were saying earlier. It's like, you know, I remember reading a few years ago that there were 2 goals of early feminism.
Right.
One was like get more people more women and girls into the workplace. And the other was to make what was traditionally like labor that women did to like bring more reverence to that. And we did one really well, and we kind of forgot about the other one. And there's like, you know, and those are the spaces that we learn who we are, and we like work out some of the tough trauma of our families or whatever, you know?
Yeah, but, no, totally. Yeah.
But you know, hearing you say like you would go into the kitchen and just be together, but also, you know, all the complications happen there too, you know?
Oh yeah.
It just makes me want to honor that space as something valuable in people's lives, you know, and to try to.
I never thought about this before, but when folks would come over, you'd go to the dining room to get more chairs and you'd bring them into the kitchen. And that's, you know, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. You know, and, I want to bring that to more and more people, you know, of all different classes. And, you know, I don't want that to be available only for certain people.
Yeah.
You know, and so to honor that in people's lives is important.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like you're able to do that in many different ways through, like you say, like through actually baking, through teaching, through writing, you know, through even, you know, designing your tours or whatever it happens to be. You can, it's the way that you do your work.
Yeah. And also
that, right?
I think with that too, that was a big part of doing with Annie, what we did, which was to like, you know, bring grain in once a month and get it out to people at wholesale cost, you know, baking for we have a free fridge here.
Okay.
I've just learned about community loaves and I'm going to start baking for them. Did you get that email from me?
Oh,
okay.
Oh, maybe.
Well, there's a woman, Catherine Kearley, who's in Seattle, who's doing this amazing project where she's teaching people, home bakers, how to bake basic loaves. And it's like a formula that she's designed. She used to teach at a college up in Seattle, but she then collects the loaves at hubs and gets them out to different food banks and food security.
Wow.
And it's such a cool program that I wrote to you after your interview with Mo Cheeks.
Yeah.
Because you guys had touched on that, and that's what she's doing. And it's only in Seattle and Portland so far, but it's a great program. So anyway, I thought you might want to know about her.
Yeah, no, for sure. No, from an interest and sharing point of view, but also it's like, oh, I could get into something like that because I don't have the scale anymore, but it's like, that would be neat to, I'm already kind of doing that with whenever I do bake, I'm baking, you know, two for us, two that goes out the door. And right now, you know, Cindy's taking them to her school to, not prime the pump because that's how we got our first bakery. Taking bread to all the teachers, just as presents, you know, but it's, there's, I've been digging into a little bit, some of the different community groups that are folks are volunteering to cook meals for homeless folks here. And because there's a big need for it. And I'm thinking, okay, how can I help as a baker?
Yeah.
Especially with my little setup here, but it's sort of like, oh, okay. If we get 10 people with their home ovens each doing two, well, that's 20 loaves a day. Oh, okay. We're getting on to something now.
Yeah. And she's kind of
interesting.
You know, I think a lot of us, I mean, bakers, I love bakers in terms of like the generosity that they usually, you know, bakers seem to always, they want to share food and.
Well, sure. Yeah.
And this program is really interesting too, because if you could come in not knowing anything about baking, and she does like, you have to do an orientation, but then on the back end, there's like a lot of education about how to make bread. So you can kind of learn alongside, you know, while you're, I mean, it's a particular formula, that's mostly whole grain and has, oat porridge in it and stuff.
Yeah.
But, so it's very nutritious for the community. And anyway, I don't sound like I'm an advertisement for it, but it's been a nice way to like, you know, to contribute also to the community in a different way.
No, but that's what fascinates me about you and about the people in your network, because like you're mentioning And I know I don't know everything like by a long shot, but you're mentioning that
whole other area that the
folks that are really into, I'm going to do this at the community level, you know, and like, talking with Annie was the same kind of conversation. Talking with Mo was like that.
Yeah.
Talking with what Brant's doing in Lebanon for, you know, and it's on the same, well, that's even a slightly bigger scale, but it's this, you know, whatever I have, I can leverage it up to something a little bit bigger than what I have in terms of impact. And it's like, and that's a bit of a transition, but when I was reading about you and stuff, and I saw the term that said, oh, okay, and it put you in with a group of people, because you were talking about grain sheds and that true kind of local grain movement, which I'm like fascinated by and know hardly anything about, like nothing. And it's, what's that journey been like for you?
To learn about the local grain shed?
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a lovely, exploratory, and also incredibly frustrating, like, you know, because it's like, yeah, like I said, it's the last frontier in the local food movement.
Yep.
And, you know, local matters to me because of food security and like all these things. But, you know, cost is an issue, and you get into ideas of privilege, and it's, but it's been a wonderful journey. Like, it's fun, you know, and I'm a writer, so I take it outside of my community, partially because like, I can write about stuff all over, but also once I started teaching on Airbnb, I did want to be able to tell people, oh, you can get local flour near you, you know, and I've tried it, and it's also like, you know, it's just we've made all these strides, but there's so far to go.
Right.
And I've hit all these like questions where it's like, now where do we go from here to make this more accessible?
Right.
And, you know, I think everybody has those questions because it's like a larger systemic issue.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's one that you need farmers at the table big time as well. Cause I still you know, I talked with a lady, a couple of years ago from Northern California, Beck's Bakery. That was doing that was sort of, you know, I'm starting to contract with farmers and
I've been to her bakery.
Yeah. And, you know, hearing about it a little bit in Michigan, a little bit in, lots in Vermont, you know, I don't know what goes on over there, but like, and, you know, down south and, you know,
Carolina
Lapidus did her book's out now. And
amazing. I love the
book. And it's like, I need to talk to her again, I think. I need to find out, you know, because I see the book being talked about, and it's just, it seems like that's a milestone book. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, just to have a book that you can open up and use like high extraction flour rather than have to convert. But also like, I love Asheville Bread Festival. I love what they have going on. Also, you know, she does the Asheville Bread Festival with like community in mind from the get-go. One, I love so many things about it. Like, it's kind of a la carte. You can go and you don't have to pay like the full $250 for the whole thing. You can just go to a few sessions, and they have, you know, she makes that accessible, but it also raises money for their local grain economy.
Right.
So, and she's just so dedicated, and there, you know, it's people like her and Nan Kohler in, at Grist and Toll, who, you know, really elevates farmers. Like Mai Nguyen is the youngest grain farmer in California.
Yeah.
And, you know, she has a partnership with Nan, and they do this kind of CSA model.
Okay.
And those two together are just doing some amazing work, you know, to address some of the.
Well, and it seems like it's still at that super, super early stage, right? Like you're never gonna, I don't know. We'll get back together in another 10 years to see if it's even, has it made double digits on a global, or like on a, like double digit inroads, but who cares in a way? It's like,
I feel like I've changed my mind over the years, probably a bunch of times, but like it, you know, we get into this like either or mentality sometimes. It's like how our brains want to work, but really it's like, it's okay maybe that stays a smaller thing and it's incorporated and get, you know, and we make inroads a little bit. I mean, you know, and I feel like in the grain community, there's all these like conversations that are really important about like, will you make more impact if you get commodity flour and just add 10% local flour, or do you need to make it 100%, you know, or I don't know. There's just all these questions that everybody's going to address them differently. And I can tell from talking to you, you're also a both and person. There's not one answer. Maybe it's layered, you know, maybe it's like,
well, cause it's kind of like, you know, for me, it's you want that good flour being used and being out in the world to more people to make it more effective for farmers to continue to keep growing that and to keep it going, you know, and like the folks at the bread lab, you know, in Washington are saying like, and you need new flours that fit new grains that fit your area, you know, to get some better yields, but still keep all of the, you know, breed wheat differently than has been done. And, but when I'm thinking like that, then I get to, but okay, but you know, what about, you know, Walmart and the wall? And it's just like, well, but you can't have small and local, small and local, small and local, and then Walmart. Like it, the end goal can't be to take your small and local and get it in Walmart. It's kind of, because by definition, that's, I get it all from one space for the cheapest possible price. And so it's almost, I know, like there's something bigger than it is today that isn't Walmart.
I know.
You know, and I like, know. I'll get there, but I don't know. Every year it gets better. Like every year I see more people talk, you know, more different grains being seeded, you know, like right from the, you know, it's that time of year in North America. I'm starting to see the, oh, there's the Redeemer crop. Here's the, here's, you know, the new seed going in the ground at my friends up in Saskatchewan or whatever. And it's like, okay, you know, it seems to be a little bit more than last year and a little bit more than last year. So, you know, more supply, more stuff for bakers to use, more people that can get a sense of what that is, you know,
And more consumers who hopefully understand why they should care about it, you know,
And totally. That's
where like, you know, where I see my job, I see that as my job. And, you know, Amy Halloran is great with educating people that way. And there's, you know, where,
And that's a beautiful thing. The fact that, there are several folks, or I've had get the chance to meet folks like Amy, folks like you, folks like Jennifer that are doing it. Is just like, okay, because you know, being the lone wolf is no fun. It's like,
have you heard of speaking of the lone wolf? Have you heard of Monica Spiller?
No.
I mean, we should all be like thanking her so much for this whole grain movement in the 80s. She's a chemist, I believe. She's a scientist. Okay. I think but she decided to, maybe a biochemist, but she decided that why aren't we eating more whole grains? And she took some grains out of the germplasm and gave them to farmers to grow out. And that takes, I don't know, that takes years and years and years.
Okay.
And so, you know, she gave, I believe that she's responsible for giving Sonora to a organic cotton farmer named Sally Fox.
Wow.
Who would interplant it between her organic cotton and then grow Sonora. And those two women were the reason that we, you know, had this resurgence of Sonora. And Monica Spiller, who I think in her 80s now, you know, we just, again, like kind of overlook her importance in this grain movement. She's amazing. Thanks. And she has a newsletter called Whole Grain Connections. And
really,
you know, she's got some ideas. Like she's very, you know, she has strong beliefs, which I appreciate. And yeah, but she's definitely somebody to know. And to, if you want to know more about whole grains and the whole grain, and she's in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. Yeah. That's, lovely. The connections are wonderful. And the, I don't know, it's just kind of cool. All the women that are leading the charge for this as well, you know, I grew up, I didn't grow up on a farm, but my grandparents farmed and stuff. Right. And
it's cool.
Very much
Saskatchewan?
In Saskatchewan. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Durum wheat was my grandpa's crop. And then when my dad bought the farm for my grandmother, he switched to fall rye because they were having a lot of erosion problems. And so this is something you could plant because the spring winds were wreaking havoc. And so literally turned the fields 90 degrees to deal with the winds and started planting fall rye to hold the soil down.
Where did that durum and then rye go? What did it go in?
It was all conventionally farmed, right? So, so it went, there was a mill, Robin Hood had a mill in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan at the time. Right. And the mill's since closed, but yeah, I rode in a couple times with the 2-ton truck with grain down to the elevator and stuff to dump it all off. Yeah. But, that was where I learned that when you're dealing with commodity stuff, it's like everybody's chasing what was good last year. What was good last year doesn't work this year, right? And so, there was a lot of, if he had a bumper crop, everyone had a bumper crop, so his stuff fell number two. I remember my grandfather used to get so mad. It was like, I finally have a good year, and now they're saying it's number two.
Right.
Last year it was a terrible year. I had none of it. Now it's number one, right? And so,
I mean, when you hear like the amount, I think I read in like in a loaf of bread from the grocery store that you pay $3-4 for, it's a grocery store loaf that farmers get like 8 cents of that.
Yeah.
Oh, that is just crazy to me. That's like, that's like the person who is caring for the land that this is, being grown on and, spending months and months and months with this and, I don't know. It's just crazy to me. So.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. And now, my parents' journey is one of, their parents in the 70s and the 80s when, inflation's through the roof and interest rates are 18% and they're trying to run a business and then, bought the farm from my grandmother and stuff. But, the 10 or 12 years that my dad was doing all the farming by himself, because my grandfather passed away, like they made no money. Like it was just, but like he was happy and it was the lifestyle thing. And they put food on their own table kind of a thing. But I was going through some of my mom's old papers and, burning stuff and shredding stuff and here's years of tax returns. And so I started flipping through them and it's like, oh my God, like, I don't think they sold $20,000 worth of grain in a year, in a 10-year period. It was just like just for peanuts,
And I mean, it's the whole thing about the whole premise of cheap food.
Yeah.
Is not a healthy idea,
because
it's like, this is the thing that becomes a part of us. And not that I understand access and I'm definitely not shaming anyone who has to subsist on cheap food, that's a reality, but I just feel like systemically the whole idea of cheap food and not paying the people who are caring for the land is just
and that's where even like whenever I hear and we do it as bakers, right? It's like that bag of flour is now $80, or a bag of einkorn flour is like $100 or whatever happens to be, right? And it's like I that was my first reaction as well, was always negative. Yeah. It was like, stop it. It's like, look at the work. Like when you know the farmer, then it's like, look at the work Nicole's putting into getting this bag of flour out the door.
Yeah. But it's also, we all exist in the same system. So you're making the same, you know, you're having to leverage the same set of, you know, ideas, you know, to make a living and feed people. And, you know, it's like, it's just hard. It's hard decisions to make and a lot to grapple with
across the chain. Yeah.
But these conversations, I think, do matter, because if you're trying to decide like, okay, I can't really afford those flowers, but maybe I could afford to put 10% in every loaf of local and, you know, maybe that is worth it. You know,
I don't know. And I can get better at the whole grain, or just the organic locally grown whole wheat flour. Mm-hmm. It's plain wheat. It's like, okay, let's see what more, there's more that I can do with this, right? I guess is the thing. There's more that I can do with the, you know, with the basic flowers in that organic realm, you know?
And like, and as you work with them, like, you know, we, I don't have one here, but mostly our everyday bread is 100% einkorn.
Oh, yeah.
I don't have to, you know, that's not a, as a home baker, I don't have to make that choice. But also like I learned, because at first I was like, einkorn is so hard to work with. And, you know, but I would just try a little bit more and a little bit more. And I'm lucky enough to know some really good bakers who I could ask questions. And then I realized that my partner, my husband, who's from the South, who grew up on Wonder Bread, who likes my, you know, whole grain rustic loaves, but the einkorn he really, really likes, you know, like there's something about it that just, you know, and so that's a whole grain bread that before I was like, you know, making, you know, just, like a sifted flour, you know, high extraction flour bread for him, because that was his favorite. But now he has this one as a whole grain, and not that it's bad to have high extraction flour, but if his everyday bread could be a whole 100% whole grain, that's
sure
not, you know, but why I, not? Yeah. I didn't like get there right away.
Yeah.
You know, a while, and I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's part of the fun for sure.
But it is expensive. Einkorn is so expensive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it, yeah. It's got it all. It has low yields. It's tough to harvest. It's shattering and tough to process. Yeah. It's got, it's got everything going for it.
But I don't have to do it for, you know, production. So
yeah, exactly.
Still
yeah.
not expensive. Not overly, but anyway, I could talk your ear off all day.
No, that's fine. Yeah. Compared to pecans, it's still doing pretty good. So Hey, I wanted to ask you though, out of curiosity, the title for your work here, sort of the theme, this thousand bites of bread. Is there a story behind that?
No, actually,
no?
I thought for like, I knew I wanted to, cause I was still running Communal Table, but I was writing more and more about bread, and I wanted a place to kind of house that body of work. And I was trading with a graphic designer, bringing her bread, and she said, "Oh, I'll make you a site." And I couldn't think of anything, And then one day I woke up and I was like, "I'm going to call it Thousand Bites of Bread." And later, somebody was helping me with a booklet that I was putting together for my classes, for the Airbnb classes. So I have, basically what my kids started calling the bread that we ate, that they could eat all the time, they called it mama bread. They would say, you know, and they, at the time they were so little and they would ask for mama bread. And so I teach like a basic recipe that's mama bread. And I decided in making that formula, because I wanted to teach people baker's math, that I would make it 1,000 grams.
Gotcha.
And so later when the person who was helping me put that together was like, "Oh, did you call it thousand bites of bread because of this, all the recipes in this book are 1,000 grams. And I was like, "No, but I'm glad that it, you know, kind of works." So.
Oh, good. Oh no, it's lovely. It makes for a nice logo too. I really like that with the scoring on the bread and stuff. Oh, cool.
Yeah. She did that. And, so.
Awesome. Awesome. Huh. And so this year ahead for you, have you got sort of any projects that you're working through?
Yeah, I really want to turn back more towards writing, like personal stuff.
Okay.
The bagel story really like showed me that that is a way that I want to go, I think. And I've got some ideas on the horizon. I also, years ago, had started writing the history of bread in fiction I wrote, you know, the Egypt chapter, and I have a lot of other ones outlined, but I want to go back to that a little bit. Yeah. I think I really want to like go back into my writing.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Having the ability to make those shifts and say, okay, you know, I'm going to teach for a bit. Now I got to get back in just sort of in my own head for a bit, see what's in there, get that out. And
yeah. And I'll keep teaching, but I feel like I've worked through some of the, you know, I do want to, So that's
awesome. Well, thanks so much for taking the time, Adrienne. It's been great.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, it's so nice to meet you. And I feel like eventually we would have seen each other at some event and had conversations like this, but it was fun to be on the show. And
beautiful. Good stuff. Well, thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you. It was nice to meet you.
So that was Adrienne. My goodness. What an amazing talk. What an amazing woman, I have to say. Just the number of times in our conversation where this idea of baking for other people, baking for the community, the communal nature of baking, the way baking brings people together, both with the end product and also with the process and also with the ingredients, it was very moving. I thought about our conversation a lot since we had it, and have thought about it a lot, you know, when I was editing it down and you know, listening to it again and that kind of thing. You know, I don't think we know it at the time, all of these important little touch points in our life, and then until you start telling your story and you realize, oh, there's a bit of a thread here and a bit of a theme to it. And I think in Adrienne's case, it's that community nature of what it is that she's doing, which I don't know. I find wonderful. I really do. And I learned a few things. I learned a lot. Who could ask for more, really, to get the chance to talk with such an interesting person, learn a bunch, realize what we have in common, realize that we're on a bit of the same journey. It feels good. Feels really good. And I hope you felt some of that too. Thanks for listening to this. I really do appreciate everyone that listens to the show and everyone who supports the show through voluntary donations at riseuppod.com. Thank you. Couldn't do this without the wonderful support that I'm receiving from you. So thanks so much for that. If you ever want to chat, if you ever want to reach out and talk, I'm checking my email far too often, mark@riseuppod.com. Would love to hear from you. Thanks so much. Until next week, have a great week. Bake lots. Enjoy the sunshine if you can find it. Happy baking. Bye-bye.